Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case. Hello, I'm Linda. Welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. Today, I'm joined by Pat, Heather, Nicola, Steph, and Teresa.
Hello. Hi.
And guess what? Today is our birthday.
Yay!
We're all excited that Write Club the podcast has now been on the air for an entire year.
Wow!
We're growing strong, still loving it, and looking forward to many more years. I hope there's going to be cake.
And wine.
And always wine.
This week on Write Club, Stephanie will be reading to us from a new work in progress. Pat will be telling us the history of Happy Birthday. We'll be talking about our writing lives and what effect the year of podcasting has had on our work. Nicola has set up an exciting new way for you to communicate with us, and she'll tell you all about that. And we're going to hear what Teresa and Monica Stott are reading at the moment. But first, Nicola is going to ask us to
name the novel.
So 1976 was when this novel was published. It grew out of a short story written by the author in 1968. And it is about Louis Dupont du Lac telling his story to a reporter, his life story.
Louis who? Louis du Lac?
Louis Dupont du Lac.
I think I might have it.
Louis
du Lac. Well, I don't know if it's all I can say to that. Okay, clue number two. One of the main characters, Claudia, is based on the author's daughter who died at 4 years old of leukemia.
Oh.
No.
Okay, no. Final clue.
I'm still sticking with my...
Final clue. Okay. The film, which was made in 1994, starred Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise.
Well, I don't know about the film, but I think I know the book.
Not a clue.
I think you've got it right, Teresa.
And I think you gave us a big clue last week.
Well, I didn't mean to, but I did.
But it's Anne Rice, Interview with a Vampire.
It is indeed.
Oh.
And I should say I did an online course, Vampire Fictions.
Oh, really?
So you studied it?
I did.
It had a massive impact on
me. The character name in the first clue, I knew that.
Yeah. It had a massive impact on me. I went on to read all the books, but not only because it made me want to go to New Orleans, but history and the folklore around the vampire legend, she really made that incredibly complex and amazing, didn't she?
Right. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever read a vampire book because they scare me. I don't want to read them.
I'll try here. I read the original, but that's it.
Well, I would recommend Carmilla by Sheridan Le Fanu as the best. And it's not a full-length novel, but it's a very good vampire story, if you want one.
I was through a phase of reading quite a few vampire things.
Oh, yeah?
Scary things.
Well, I had the idea that I was going to write something with a vampire in it, perhaps based on Balkan vampire tradition in Greek stories. And this course came up, an online course at the University of Edge Hill, which is in England. And it was a brilliant course, but the novel is still there. It's the other novel that I'm not working on. But it doesn't have a vampire in it. They're sort of really, if you like, there may be some parasitic people in it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You mean children.
Thank you, Nicola. That was very interesting then.
Hello, Write Clubbers. This is Susanna Marriott from the Professional Writing Academy. We've worked with lots of you, teaching you to write with our online courses. So happy first birthday. We are continually impressed by your commitment to writing and by the way you bring together writers and the writing profession from around the globe in this really fun and informative way. And it's such a delight to hear it's continuing on into its second year. So long may you continue write clubbing. All the best from all of us at the Professional Writing Academy.
Hi there, this is Aisha Mackay, author of Killing It, and I'm just wanting to wish the Write Club a very happy first birthday. As we all know, writing involves spending a lot of the day staring at a computer, sometimes quite happily, sometimes quite desperately. And that's why the Write Club is a brilliant place for writers to get together, share info, and generally egg each other on. Here's to the many, many years to come. Happy celebrating!
Well, as you know, Stephanie has finished her first novel and is now on to something new. Steph?
Yeah, well, I was onto something new and I got really, really stuck. So I've been doing a few sort of unblocking exercises to see if it will help me. So I wanted to write something about birth or birthdays. Mm-hmm. It didn't come out quite how I thought.
Joyful celebration.
Yeah, the joyful celebration. This was really an exercise about a protagonist with a very deep secret. So, you know, it was the exercise that says, I've never told anybody this, but.
Right.
So this was where this came from. And I've called it Night Fever. I tried to hold her back to keep the testament to my sin inside me, but she fought to be born and won the battle in a rush of blood and adrenaline. When I saw the perfect creature in my husband's arms, the look of wonderment on his face, I wept. As he kissed her, I prayed to a God I didn't believe in that he'd love her enough for both of us because I knew I never would. It was too late to do anything about the pregnancy by the time I summoned up the courage to share it with David. I was barely 16 and David, 3 years older, although he still looked like a schoolboy with his mop of conker-coloured curls. We were just unlucky, David said. Condoms aren't 100% reliable. David's mother sewed my wedding dress and her daughter's bridesmaid's dress on a hand-turned sewing machine. She found old curtains at a jumble sale and made them into cushion covers for our second-hand sofa. Each evening she sat knitting matinee copes, bonnets and booties in soft lemons, creams and whites in readiness for her grandchild. By contrast, my mother was brittle with shame. If I expressed discomfort, she was curt. I had made my bed and should have thought about that before. I had forfeited my right to be treated with care and consideration. I was sullied and unworthy. I longed for some sign of tenderness, but I bore her malice without complaint. Guilty as charged. After muted wedding celebrations, we moved into our rented flat. By day, I cleaned and cooked for David, got to know the neighbours, washed terry nappies and tiny clothes as any expectant mother might. By night, I dreamt of monstrous children, hideously deformed, misshapen and damaged by my wanton body. David was excited about becoming a father, while I lived with a terror I dare not share. There were whole days when I convinced myself it would be okay. Then, in an unguarded moment, the truth would reassert itself. The gnawing anxiety returned and grew into a loathing of the flesh I carried inside my own. Shame was my closest companion. It happened at a school disco. We sneaked bottles of vodka to top up the ubiquitous Coke, and as the alcohol loosened our inhibitions and the sugary caffeine injected confidence, we gyrated in the warm soup of teenage bodies, shouting the lyrics with our eyes closed. My head swam. My stomach lurched and I only just made it outside. I thought my body was turning inside out as I retched and emptied myself to the distant sound of Night Fever. He stroked my back and afterwards, as I leant against the science block, panting, he brushed my hair back from my face and offered me a polo mint. He left for what seemed only a moment and returned with a plastic beaker of blessedly cold water. I gulped, unaware of the payment he would require. At first I laughed and pushed him away as if it was a joke, but it seemed to excite him more. When I began to cry, a sneer of lust painted his face. In the end, I just gritted my teeth and let him bang away.
That is bleak. So strong. Yeah, it just, the word that comes to mind for me, first of all, was brutal. The way she was feeling, the way she, her mother treated her, and you could see from the description of her mother that it wasn't just then, it's pretty much been her whole life, I think, of being disapproved and not worthy. And just, it was just powerful, I think.
Very powerful. I used exactly the same word. Yeah. And great authenticity, really believe in this young woman and everything she's going through.
Yes.
There were some masterful touches. I loved the phrase, "I prayed to a God I didn't believe in, and love her enough for both of us because I knew I never would."
I love that too.
Yeah, it's just awesome. Fabulous. And Night Fever, just dropping in, that immediately took anyone back to the 70s.
I like the structure as well, the way
it comes back. Yes, I think you're right. It's really well structured, and I could easily, I know this isn't a complete piece, but I could easily see this winning a short story competition. It's well written, but it's the structure as well, the way that the story's told. And
I didn't know if it was a complete piece or not.
No, as I say, it was an exercise to try and the exercise was, you had to say, "I've never told anybody this," and to get into character and write the character's deepest, darkest secret. And obviously, if you were going to put that character in a novel, that would come out at the end rather than the beginning.
Yeah. I've got a teensy tiny point of she's washing tiny baby clothes before the baby arrives.
Married, before the baby.
Yeah, well, that's what we used to do in the 70s. What? You'd buy the baby clothes, wash them by hand in fairy flakes, Lux flakes, and the nappies. You washed them all before the baby was born.
But only one.
To get them ready.
You didn't spend all your time. I don't spend much time doing that, but
I don't think that was the problem for me, because baby clothes are washed before they wear them, but I think it indicated that this is what I do
continually.
But I did like the last sentence of that little paragraph.
Yes.
The dreaming of monstrous children.
I think the phrase "condoms aren't 100% reliable" seemed to me redundant. "We were just unlucky" is enough.
I don't know. I like knowing that they'd tried some prevention. I
didn't believe him.
Okay. I'm assuming this is not David at the end.
So now I am confused.
So when you realise that, and you see David's mother making the wedding dress and the baby clothes, and David making this commitment, do you understand why she's got this terrible secret that she dared tell?
I didn't realise that.
Okay, she doesn't feel love for this baby because it's
the product of a rape.
But also, if you like, the cuckoo in the nest, I assumed.
Well, I just made a comment about some of the language later on sounding pretty evil, and I thought, but David's not an evil person. He's caring and loving for the baby, so I didn't understand that we were talking about a different...
As two of us missed it then. What could you do to...
Yeah, because
reading it real.
Well, it's interesting that you didn't get it, because that will send me back to look at it and say, how can I make it more explicit without being explicit?
I like it as it is, so that worked for me. To me, there was never any doubt. I'd be shocked if you said that was David.
It was a rape when she was drunk, and she's guilty because she was drunk.
That's interesting too, because I actually didn't see it as a rape. I just saw it as a drunken fumble behind a disco.
Okay, you could call it a drunken fumble, but because she did
there
give
is
in
this
in the
problem
end.
Of definition
and you know the whole Me Too thing, in the 70s that kind of thing at a school disco wouldn't have been considered a rape,
which is why I thought it must have been David.
That's what I thought too. I was sure it was David, and I thought, I've made notes here, to use a word like sneer with David, it seems evil.
David is 3 years older.
Yeah. I know, but...
So what would he be doing at a school disco? I hadn't thought about it that logically, but yes, he does belong at a school disco.
That's why I'd said he was 3 years older.
So she has a boyfriend called David,
and she's having sex with him.
Yeah.
Then she gets raped at the school disco and ends up having a baby. But
so maybe
half
the thing about
the
condoms is relevant, really. Yeah. Because he's taking responsibility. But he's accepting that we've been careful, but we failed. Yes. So maybe that is relevant. Yeah. And I'll take that back.
Well, I need to look at...
I prefer a little more direction.
I would too, because it never occurred to me.
It's a difficult balance, isn't it? Because if you make it obvious, then
there's no story.
There's nothing to it. Yeah.
You're giving the secret, then.
I have to say... I didn't like a sneer of lust painted
his face.
I didn't
either. I put that here.
It's the painted his face, is it?
Yeah. The sneer as well, and painted, I didn't like. I didn't think
painted. Well, I think a sneer of lust, I can visualise that.
Mm-hmm. It's more it's more animalistic, isn't it, when they, not that I can remember that far back.
Yeah, I don't know how you'll do that, Steph, but you're so talented, I'm sure you will. Make us understand somehow without revealing the secret.
And I like the warm soup of teenage boys.
Yes, I thought that was a very good, descriptive passage. The only thing that snagged me was the ubiquitous Coke, and I thought ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Just that word just pulled me up a little bit, but
okay,
that may be just me. Mm. I'd have those.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I should take that away.
I have one or two little punctuation comments.
I'm very glad you did. Thank you.
Promoting the efficacy of the colon.
Thank you.
Happy birthday, Write Club, the podcast. I'm Hannah, I'm from Marlow, and I'm a low-ranking reader who, quite frankly, needs to make far more time to read. So I thoroughly enjoy listening to Write Club and to all of your recommendations and obviously all of your witty banter. So happy birthday again, Write Club, and please keep up the good work. Bye.
Pat's going to take a few minutes now to entertain us. She's going to tell us about
the history of Happy Birthday.
Because it's our birthday.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday, dear podcast. Happy birthday to us.
I thought we wouldn't do that, so I didn't join in the song.
That's okay. Okay, the history of the song Happy Birthday dates back to 1893, and its origins are in America, not in the UK. Yeah, but in fact, the words happy birthday weren't originally there. Sisters Mildred and Patty Hill composed the song to sing to their pupils every day. And the lyrics were, good morning to you, good morning to you, good morning, dear children, good morning to all.
How nice. What a delightful song they must have run.
Absolutely. But then, early 20th century, about 1911, apparently the birthday lyrics sneak in. And people started singing it at parties, using happy birthday instead of good morning to all. But it didn't appear in print until 1924. Though the melody always stayed the same. And then at the beginning of the 1930s, the song hit the screen and the stage.
Oh.
Started to appear in films and on the airwaves, but at that time entirely without royalties. And it first appeared in a Broadway musical in 1931. In The Bandwagon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was wondering about that. So a few years later, 1934, after the song had appeared in the public domain numerous times, the third sister, Jessica, she took a stand and secured the copyright.
Good for her.
And so the first copyrighted version then was printed in 1935. And the Hills then have rights if it's sung for profit.
Uh-huh.
So just singing it,
mm-hmm,
like we did.
On a not-for-profit podcast.
Yeah, wouldn't have sort of occasioned any. But if it was sung for profit, they had rights until 1991. Uh-huh. But then that was extended till 2030. But in 1988, Warner Music became owners of the song. And they benefited then from its reported $2 million annual royalties.
No.
Good
Lord. Yeah, that one little song.
No.
Was generating an absolute fortune. But then a few years back, 2010, some questions were raised over the ownership. And a guy called Robert Braunis published a paper, Copyright and the World's Most Popular Song. And he brought the Hills' ownership of the melody into dispute.
Yeah.
Because I didn't write the lyrics.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And 2013, it went to court. Yeah, uh-huh. Very recently. A filmmaker, Jennifer Nelson, she filed a lawsuit against Warner Music after they charged her $1,500 to make a film about the song and include a clip. And in 2015, the legal powers that be in America declared that Happy Birthday to You is not under copyright, and so it now has become royalty-free.
Hmm.
So royalties will no longer have to be paid to Warner Music for use of this popular song.
Fabulous.
But if you used, for example, a particular musician or singer performing it, you would have to pay royalties to them.
To them,
just
yes.
to, I think.
Yes. Right,
yes.
right.
Yes. That's a performance
yeah.
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, so you could use, you could have your characters in your book singing Happy Birthday to you.
Well, that was interesting.
That seemed appropriate.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. I had no idea.
Sing away.
These things had occurred so recently. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, you can argue even about a cute little ditty like Happy Birthday when it comes to money, right? Thanks, Pat.
Hi, everyone. I'm Frank Carver, and I'd like to say Happy Birthday, Write Club. Write Club has literally changed my life. In late spring this year, I took my daughter to a writer's festival. It was interesting. I'd never actually thought about writing more than the occasional blog post or article, but in the end I didn't do anything about it. But a few months later, I found a Write Club bingo card which I'd picked up at the festival. I listened to all the podcasts, joined the Facebook group, and started trying to check off the items on the bingo card. That lot gave me so much confidence that I entered and completed NaNoWriMo this year, and now I have a first draft of my first novel. So thank you so much, Write Club, for setting my writing machine in motion. I still haven't finished the bingo card yet, though.
Well, this has been a very busy year for us. We've been doing the podcast for a year now, and I don't think any one of us, apart from Nicola, perhaps, who's had a lot of experience with podcasts, knew how much time we'd be spending on it. It's a true labor of love. But we've gone from being a write club that met once every 2 weeks to meeting a once a week or sometimes more, as well as sending loads of emails and Facebook posts and having phone calls with each other all the time. Other than the time spent, how do each of you think the podcast has changed your writing, if at all? Teresa?
Well, in some ways, you know, it is a bit like having a job, an almost full-time job. And in theory, that would stop me writing. But actually, the need to produce works in progress and to keep up with you guys has actually made me more productive. As you know, I am the least productive writer present. But I have done more. And I've branched out a little bit into creative non-fiction with travel writing this year. But I'm definitely writing more regularly. Still not really finishing much, but, you know, that's me. That's who I am. It's fine. I'm happy enough. You know, I'm really loving what I'm doing. And I still, sorry, Linda, have several projects right. on the go. But, yeah, I think I've done more and I've branched out into other areas, mm-hmm. Including having a go at some fiction for children. Mm-hmm. So I'm amazed we're doing this. I'm amazed yeah. a year has passed and still loving it and still excited to come into the studio and record
yes.
and make all the cock-ups and everything that we do and then listen to it and think, gosh, it sounds quite
yeah.
good. So I think it's impacted positively for me both in my whole life uh-huh. and spending more time with you guys and with our listeners as well.
Yeah.
And also we've got those relationships that we've built with our listeners on Facebook
yeah.
and, you know, with writers. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big boost as well, getting lots and lots of advice from experienced and published writers and teachers. And so for me, it's all good.
This is Catherine de Bono wishing you a very happy birthday. I wanted to say thank you for all the support that you've given me and my work over the past year. And also, I think it's fantastic what you've been doing in extending the writing community across all boundaries, across oceans, so that everybody who is a lover of literature in whatever form can communicate and get together. I have a new project coming up. I'm not allowed to talk about it just yet, but hopefully I will in the new year. Have a lovely Christmas. Happy birthday again. And I can't wait to see what happens next. Thank you. Bye.
For me, it's changed my life in that, well, I think we're all going to say about the friendships that we've formed here mm-hmm. and how much we look forward to doing this and being together. But one of the things that's different for me definitely is the pressure of deadlines, which is wonderful to get you to do something. Yeah. In addition to that, from the feedback I've received, my writing has grown. I think it's really improved a lot because of all the feedback that I get from you. And you pick up things from here and from reading your other writers and take it with you. And I am very grateful for that. I asked Hal, my husband, how do you think the podcast has changed my life, my writing? He said, well, your writing is great. But he said, I think mostly it's all the time you spend. He's very good about being patient. But yeah.
So does he feel a little bit pushed out by it?
No, he's very proud of us. Okay. He's so proud of us. He tells everybody how brilliant it is. And I said, but you don't even read my writing.
But he believes in you. That's the thing.
Yeah,
that's great. Good.
Here's what Laura Wilkinson had to say.
What I love about Write Club is hearing about other writers' journeys and stories and working processes. I can just never get enough of that as a writer myself. And I find that I learn so much as well, which is just brilliant. Plus, it's so warm and friendly, like a nice warm bath.
Heather?
Well, I started off, I dreaded it. I was really quite nervous about doing it. I don't like the sound of my own voice, and it's taken me a while, but I think for the same reasons that you said, being together, all the things that we do, and I am now looking forward to doing it. I don't know if my writing has improved. I still need a lot of critique to try and get it right, but I do enjoy it, and I think you said that I think the friendships that we've made and you know, our relationships, and I'm glad we've done it now.
Yeah. We sort of have this intimate group, the six of us here, but we have this wider family, and certain people communicate with us a lot and definitely feel proud of the Write Club family, which is really lovely.
I am always excited to see online on our Facebook group when a new listener clucks in and says, oh, I heard this, or I thought that, or here's what I'm doing. It's wonderful. It's very exciting to have new people popping up and saying,
it's like having that great big virtual world
right
club all over the world.
And another thing, Heather, that you've said, of course, I've taken such inspiration from you for taking a day a week and actually devoting it just to writing. You have Tuesdays, I've adopted Mondays. Monday I have the whole day for writing. And so that's been a change for me.
This is Liz Harris. This is for your birthday podcast. I just want to say how much I enjoy being part of Write Club podcast, because I love being part of a writing community, particularly one without frontiers. You span many countries, a place where everyone who loves reading, writing, and talking about what they're reading and writing can interact with each other. Thank you so much for what was a brilliant idea.
How about you, Stephanie?
Well, I've got the book finished, which I think I would have done anyway, but it was it was actually nice to write the end, although, as I've said often, it's never the end, because I do go back and have a little fiddle. For me, two things. One is Teresa introduced us to You Write On, and Nicola then picked up the mantle, and I went on and had a look. And I've spent several weeks at number one on You Write On.
The day I went on to see where I was, 23, and I noticed that Lacking Grace was at number one, I have not stopped talking about it.
Can I just say, we've got two in the top 30?
So that's been wonderful, because actually you get some really good, I mean, there's not enough of it on there. I'd really like to be able to put lots more on.
Oh, right.
You know, and to put more words on. But it's really nice to get feedback from people.
Well, the fact you shot straight to number one is just astonishing, isn't it?
I'm very fortunate.
Were you number three or four for a little while?
I was number three for a while,
about two weeks. And then she went to number one.
So for me, the most wonderful thing, apart from what we've already said, and our new friends on Facebook and this group of people, I think the lessons that I've learnt from listening to what all those published authors are telling us. And the big takeaway for me is just write.
Yes.
Keep at it. Keep writing. Right. You know, Aisha Mackay talked about getting up early. I've said this before, you know, getting up early to write. And Keziah Frost said, well, I just knew that I was nearly 60. I better damn well pull my finger out if I was ever going to do anything. So, you know, everybody has talked about perseverance, resilience. And I think for me, that's been a big takeaway. You kind of know that deep down in your heart, don't you?
Yes.
But just recently, more recently, trying to kind of find a really engaging idea. When I say engaging, I mean an idea that will engage me in a story. That I am struggling with.
You're looking, looking not just for an idea, but something that will become a novel.
That I will feel passionate about.
Yes. Yeah.
And I've come up with several story ideas, but nothing's actually made me go, oh my God, I've just got to write this all down the way that the last one did. Mm. So I've been working with a book called What If, which is Writing Exercises for Fiction Writers by Anne Bernays and Pamela Painter. And I've gone online and looked for exercises and stuff. So if anybody out there has got some really good sort of coming up with ideas exercises, I'd love to do them, because I do come up with little snippets, and I hopefully eventually I'll be able to go, I see a plot here. So, and I can put them all together.
In the meantime, you might produce some interesting short stories.
Well, that's,
the one we're talking about today.
I think so,
which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. And I will probably go and find a home for that in the short story competition.
Yeah, I think you should.
Given your feedback.
BBC short story competition for 2019. Springs to mind.
Oh, hi, this is Ursula Banting. I'm just leaving a message regarding Write Club's first birthday, which is hugely exciting. I would just like to say that there are a couple of things about Write Club that I absolutely adore. I think the first thing is that I love your What's on Your Bedside Table slot. I think it's fabulous to hear what people are reading and getting a little bit of an overview and synopsis of what other books that are out there that may interest me. And secondly, I think that just the fact that you have such a diverse amount of different guest speakers that write in different genres and different styles is of great interest to me. I think you're doing an amazing job, ladies. Keep up the good work and look forward to another year of Write Club.
Pat, how about you?
All of the above, really. I think, yes, the deadlines are good. I have one problem, one major problem, and that I find my writing time limited by the number of books, increasing number of books, that I think, oh, that sounds fabulous. I really must read that. So I'm always wanting to get to read. And I sort of try and con myself into thinking, yes, but the more I read, the more ideas that I'll get.
It's all part and also because when we're interviewing writers, we like to read their work. Obviously, we don't want to talk to people, you know, in an ignorant way, not knowing their work. So sometimes that involves speed reading, occasionally.
So that sort of takes up a huge amount of time. But I think having the deadlines, and now finally, it took a long, long time. I think I'm challenging you for the title of whatever you say.
Least prolific writer.
Yeah, I'm sure that's
how many words did that your story end up
in? I don't know. Between five and six, I think.
You should put it on New Write On and see what happens to it.
Yeah, it's just the right length.
It's just the right length for you, writers. Yes, definitely.
I'd have to go back and edit, and I was doing a Stephen King and leaving it in the drawer.
I was going to ask you that. Have you ever gone through the whole thing? Or have you just written the ending and not kind of read the
No, I go back and I look, but I haven't actually revised or edited. Maybe one or two little bits. But, I mean, I can remember there was a chunk somewhere in the middle, and I can remember actually writing for critique, such and such will happen here. Because I had to sort of, like, just move
sometimes
it on.
Sometimes I do that. I just leave a note and say, this needs another paragraph or something. Yeah.
And then something happened later on, the way it developed later on. I thought, I'm going to have to go back. I'm going to stick with short stories or...
Long short stories.
Well, I might go for some shorter short stories.
Yeah.
And I'm also thinking drama as well.
I mean, the other thing that I would say is I'm totally over the thing of, like, I'm not a writer because I haven't written a novel. That just remind me about that. And, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. No. You know, I still have these two novels living side by side in my head that are going nowhere. And one day I might complete one of them or both of them.
Or neither and another one. I mean, it doesn't matter.
I'm loving what I'm doing. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm having little successes now and then. But even if you write a play, as I have done on occasion for a local Amdram group, and they put it on, that is fantastic, because how many people write plays and they never see the light of day? You see them performed. So it's all good, right, as I'm concerned.
Well, Teresa, you definitely have to consider yourself a writer. I don't know how you could not, because you're not even amateur anymore, because you've been paid for stuff.
And you've won prizes.
Well, as I say, I'm over that whole thing you have to have a when you're a published novelist, then you're a writer. That's not true. Mm-hmm. That's just
we're all writers.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, I said something about you not finishing things, mm-hmm. and I keep hearing that come up again with you.
I'm only teasing you. I'm going to apologize. I'm only teasing. Because it's just a bit of fun.
No, I wish now that I had more things started, because I want to be able to enter competitions, and I have nothing because I'm just working on this smaller piece.
Mm. Well, I think you could probably take an episode from Mary Magdalene's life and make you just think? Take it a scene out and make it into a short story if you wanted to. I don't see why not.
Yeah. Mm. Well, perhaps I'll do it.
Hello, Chris Heath, author of The World According to Grandpa here, wishing all at the Write Club podcast a very happy first birthday. It's my number one all-time favourite podcast about writing, hosted by amazing women. Let's hope it's the first of many. Happy birthday.
How about you, Nicola?
I'm the person who this time last year hadn't written anything creatively ever, apart from when I was a child. And I just find it so unbelievably magical that I have 13,500 words and a fully plotted book and a fully plotted trilogy. Uh-huh. And the most amazing thing is it's a combination of not wanting to fall in front of you guys and to let you down. So the deadlines really work. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is when I listen to the interviews we do with other authors, I just get so inspired.
Yes.
Well, especially when I hear the one saying, you know, oh, it was my 8th book and I was beginning to despair. But the fact that it took me till January to even have a germ of an idea, but you guys let me in anyway and then tolerated me, and because I enjoyed the free creative free rights and everything. And I realised I'd really turned a corner the other day, because I had to write 500 words for a work in progress. Someone's put out and he was saying, I haven't seen yours yet.
Yeah, right.
I thought, God damn, I better put my other stuff to one side and do it. So, and I ended up writing 3,000 words. And technically speaking, it was a scene I hadn't been looking forward to writing at all. And I did it and I wrote that. And it just all completely flowed out of me. So obviously the germination, as you talk about germinating your stories.
And gestating.
Gestating. Yeah. It's all been sort of swirling around inside. But to actually come so far in so short a time from not being a writer to feeling like a writer, mm-hmm. and being so inspired by all the other authors.
But I also think sometimes, you know, I've said that I like to gestate ideas and so on, but sometimes just nailing your seat to the chair. And get it out, and then you can make it better if it needs to be made better, but stop thinking about it and mulling it over and just get something out and see if it works.
Physician, heal thyself.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, it's a commitment to yourself. It's a commitment to others, this podcast, and that's good. And then I think out of that grows a commitment to yourself as a writer.
I think so. And I love that you sat down and wrote 3,000 words and it was just all there, because that's like when you really have the muse with you. It's just joyful for right.
And I can see it. I can see it. And it's becoming, the characters are becoming like friends. Yeah. And I, you know, people say that stuff and you'll think, yeah. But, you know, I'm getting to the point where I can't stop now, because there's a story that I feel didn't exist before. And now it does exist and it needs to be told.
It's amazing alchemy, isn't it? Yeah. You get that feeling like I owe it now to these characters I invented for them to see the light of day, for them to enter the public sphere, if you like. And I feel that, not for my creation, but for Mary Magdalene as well, that she deserves a wider public. She deserves to be in a book and to be out there. And I feel for all of us, really. Yeah. But you do have, it's a strange thing to say, but you do start to
believe them,
characters.
For me, it's also about honouring the authors that have gone before, that have made me, that created worlds for me to live in. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. People like Ian Banks and Michael Marshall Smith and Sherry Tepper and all those people that I, you know, just love their books so much. The fact that they did it and inspired me and made me, gave me somewhere to live in my head. Mm-hmm. Now I'd like to do that for other people.
Yeah. Oh,
Daniel keeps shouting at me and saying, come on.
My turn. Do you have sometimes, as Stephanie has said, she had a character saying, but you didn't put me in that scene. I mean, we've all talked about how much we love being together, how much we enjoy doing the podcast, and and how the deadlines help. How do you think your writing itself has been affected? I mean, in terms of style or language or voice?
Well, I've definitely read more diverse writing, and I think that has helped because it's given me confidence to write as myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I keep, you know, we keep talking about the book, oh, that sounds like a good one. And then I, you know, often do go off and order it. So I think reading more diversely suggestions that come up here has really helped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Heather?
Well, I think just suppose a bit like Nicola said, I'd never done it. I'd never considered. I'd never considered writing anything ever. And so that's been quite a revelation. I've got some stories inside my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to rewrite Cinderella only because I've written so much of the vulnerable stuff. Uh-huh. I needed to just get away from that and do something that, you know, was completely different.
Pure
and so then I can go back and finish off.
Then we assume that you're not making Cinderella a vulnerable character.
Oh, okay. That'll be no, absolutely. She's not going to be vulnerable at all.
See there, look at you. You're having these ideas. And I think your voice is much stronger and more consistent than it was for a long time.
Something just popped into my head about the podcast particularly is the fact that we've created a community. We had a tiny community of six of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've created a much bigger community, and now I've got a way of tapping into a community wherever I go in the world.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And it's given me some, you know, if I go to Brighton, I can join the local writers group.
Yes,
there.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's, there's communities
like
this. I'm
sure Laura Wilkinson will welcome you in Brighton anytime.
Yeah. When we talk to the writing group leaders in that episode some time ago, I think that was really important that, you know, writing groups really do help you bring
up. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I love it when people share on the Facebook group, you know, stuff that they've written.
Yeah.
Frank Carver's put quite a bit up. Yeah. You know, really enjoyed his work.
Well, when we interviewed Peter Flannery, and he said about, you know, being part of a writing group. So you've got successful authors that are still depending on their writing groups and to give them that support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about you? Do you think your voice has changed or your style?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm able to judge that, really. Mm. You know, when I've been writing the travel pieces, I have a different voice in that, I think.
Yeah.
And as Stephanie's pointed out, I tend to write in the present tense when I'm talking non-fictional events.
Right.
Mm.
It's difficult for me to pin down, but I'm kind of aware, perhaps, of being less flowery in my writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the piece that we did last week, the work in progress that we did, which was an old piece, which had some very descriptive writing, the fairy tale influence piece. When I read it now, I think, oh, it's a bit overwritten, but you guys didn't seem to think that. But
I think it was appropriate.
Maybe that's it. It's about what's appropriate. Mm. But in general, I feel that my writing is better. My first drafts are better than they used to be. And I think that's true of all of us, actually, and it's getting quite difficult to critique stuff. Because you're all getting a bit good and you get this thing, so how am I supposed to critique this?
Well, there's always suggestions you can
make. Yes,
critiquing, I think it's important. Critiquing is not criticism.
No,
right.
No.
Critiquing is saying, here's an idea that might make it even better.
Yes,
right. It's not saying that's wrong. You know, so it's just highlighting things that you spot, isn't it?
Yeah. How about you, Pat? Do you think you've...
No, I think I agree with Teresa. I think I've become more aware every now and again. I hear Steph's voice going point of view.
Yes.
Yes, and I hear yours going punctuation.
Yes, yes. We've all got those little ones.
Yeah.
Adverbs.
Oh, don't talk to me about adverbs.
And Steph's saying, smell.
And Linda's saying, no excuses, you said you were going to do this.
I think the turning point I've reached is as a result of you talking about smells week after week.
Yeah.
Because I've had a real, well, you'll hear about it at some point, but I've had a real turning point. And I think if we hadn't heard Steph saying smells so often, it wouldn't have occurred to me.
There you go.
The forgotten sense. Yeah.
That's it, really. I think it is on those little technical things. And I think I'm more analytical as I write than I probably was previously.
Right.
So I think from the podcast, it is hearing from all those different people.
Right.
Sort of
I think the research that we do, you know, when we say, right, we're going to talk about point of view, for example, you know, we all go off and do some research.
Yes.
And that's a way of educating ourselves. So I think as a direct result of the podcast, I've spent more time on the sort of technical study than I might otherwise have done.
And on things like genre and historical, you know, things like Black History Week and all of these things we've had to...
Yeah, they've opened us up to wider experience than we might otherwise have.
And I've particularly enjoyed, not, it's not a writing point, it's as a reader, but discovering classics that I haven't read, like Zora Neale Hurston and My Antonia by Willa Cather. So that's something that's come out of doing the podcast. As Nicola said, expanding your reading horizons.
And hearing people's bedside tables is great.
Right, yes.
It's great. And I've got so many books on my pile of unread books. Because I can't control myself.
Well,
maybe I'm going to have to not buy another book till I've read everything in the book.
Well, yeah, I've said that before.
I've been saying that about Kindle for a while because I use a Kindle mostly now. Although I miss holding a book, arthritis in my hands makes it very much easier for me to use the Kindle. But there are so many books there, I think that it's not possible to run out of storage on a Kindle, is it?
Well, I was beginning to worry about that.
It's all stored for you on the cloud anyway, so you can take it off your Kindle and it's still in your library.
Stephanie, how about you? Do you think your voice has changed, your style, your language, any
confidence? Certainly, I think my confidence, you know, as I said before, hearing people saying, I just wrote and I just did it and I kept going and I persevered. And eventually, on my 10th book, somebody said, this is good enough, you know, and you kind of speak to these people and you think, God, they're just like me.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things is that I correct myself more now when it comes to things like point of view. If I have a switch or a slight slip in a point of view, because Stephanie has been so consistent in spotting those that now, I mean, it's like teaching me to spot it myself.
And show, don't tell.
Yeah, and show, don't tell, and add some smells. And
brace yourselves, there's about to be a whole load more smells coming.
In an episode soon.
Yes. And I've been looking more at the place, the setting. So if you notice, all of the podcasts have a theme. Everything is theme-oriented. And for each of those, we have to do some research to find out what we're going to be talking about. And that, as you said, has really made me more aware. You're paying a lot more attention.
You're reading like a writer.
Right. Yeah. That's one of the things.
I mean, when we were doing the sense of place thing, I looked at Michael Marshall Smith because I wanted to see, you know, a science fiction writer who's inspired me recently, and I wanted to see how he handled place. And it was interesting that actually he doesn't hardly ever mention it.
Really?
I'd read it oblivious, but it was only when I went back to read it again as a writer now that I realised you can convey a sense of place very economically with a few words.
Isn't that interesting? And I suppose you felt there was a strong sense of place there without
My brain supplied it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, completely.
That's excellent, isn't it?
Well, that's another big lesson, isn't it? Which I think is important, is leaving space for the reader.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's just fabulous what we've done here, I think. And you know what?
We are ace.
Oh, we are so good.
I hope you agree.
Feel free to disagree.
You can, but no, it just feels good being here doing it. It's a wonderful experience. I've been encouraged.
That is just the best thing, because when you put a podcast out, we all told our friends and we all shared it on social media.
Right.
But, you know, now it's got a life of its own. Now we're reaching out to authors and they say, I'm a listener.
How cool is that? So gratifying.
Do you remember when we interviewed Jackie Smith about travel blogging? And she said, I started out writing for my family and friends, but I very soon realised they're not interested.
Right.
You do start out saying, tell all your friends, please listen to this, you've made this, please listen. And some of them who are interested are still with us.
Right.
But mostly it's not our family and friends because, you know, you can't...
We haven't got that many family and friends. Well, certainly not that many friends.
Not that many friends, no.
It's quite a
magical thing.
So here's to the next year.
Here's to the next year. What are we going to do in the next year then?
Oh, goodness, let's grow some more. Any other last words on this, ladies?
I'm very interested in all the comments that we've had from all of our listeners. That's been really gratifying hearing what they've been saying.
And we're sharing those here too, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. We're sharing those
that people have sent to us.
And in fact, here's one from Jill Rochelle. I like Write Club, the podcast, because it's like a group of old friends nattering about books.
We love compliments.
I like feedback. I don't just need compliments. I like critique.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. And candid.
It is nice when it's positive critique, yeah. But I like critique nonetheless.
But being candid, we like candid.
Yeah.
So. Well, Nicola, you're going to tell everybody now about SpeakTube and what that's about?
No.
What are you going to tell us about?
I'm going to tell you about SpeakPipe, nearly the same.
Pipes and tubes.
Yes. So we have set up a rather marvellous little gadget on one of my pages on my website. It's called nicolacairncross.com/writeclub, all one word. And if you go over there, ideally not on your mobile phone, if you go over there on a laptop or a tablet, you should be able to just press a little orange button that says leave us a message and tell us what you think of Write Club, what you'd like to see more of, what you'd like us to lose, if anything, what you enjoy, and whether you're in our community, in fact, in the Facebook group. So nicolacairncross.com/writeclub. We'll put a link in the group, but do come over and tell us what you think of it, because we're open to change as well, right. Aren't we? If there's a bit that isn't quite so popular, we could change it and add something new, perhaps.
What if there's someone who wants to say, oh, I want to do one of the bedside table things?
Oh, we can do that too. Now, the other thing is, I'd like to make it plain that you can just record a bit of audio on your phone and just email it to us. Send any audio or indeed email feedback. You can do that as well to contributions@writeclubthepodcast.com.
Yeah, we want to have some more bedside tables and see what you guys are reading too. That would be terrific. So.
Yeah, and the format for that is simple. It's just who you are, where you're from, and what you're reading and what you like about it.
So it's just about time for us to close now. But before we do, Teresa and Monica Stott are going to tell us what they're reading at the moment. Teresa, what's on your bedside table?
Well, I am reading Pleasing Mr. Pepys by Deborah Swift. And as you might guess, it's set in London in the late 1660s. So this is London after the plague and after the fire, based very much on Pepys' diaries. But she takes us into different areas of London. So we see the hardship, the homelessness, the poverty of sailors who haven't been paid after the recent war with the Dutch, and so on. But the main protagonist is Deb, and again, a real historical figure, who comes to the Pepys household as a companion to Mrs. Pepys. Mm. Now, I don't know how familiar you are with Samuel Pepys, but from his diaries, it's very well known that he was rather lecherous and exploited and took advantage of female servants. And so Deb has to fend off Mr. Pepys. At the same time, she's trying to establish this companion relationship with Mrs. Pepys, who becomes jealous of her because she sees her husband's attention to her, none of which is Deb's fault. The other strand that Deborah Swift has put in the story is that Deb is seeking her mother, who left the family home some years ago in strange circumstances. Mm. So she thinks her mother might be in London. Meanwhile, Deb makes a very bad choice of friend. And I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but she gets involved in some dark and dangerous situations. She's getting in deeper and deeper, and all the time you're saying, stop it, you want to get out of this situation. But she gets more and more into trouble and danger. So as well as lots of period detail, I will say Deborah Swift doesn't ram her research down your throat. She just knows it. It's there and it's all. She's very familiar with 17th century London. But it's a brilliantly plotted and gripping story, and I'm very much enjoying
Sounds
it.
Sounds great.
Well, it does sound good. That's another one.
Yeah, we just write it down.
Thanks, Teresa. So, Monica, what's on your bedside table?
So a book that I've just finished reading is The Power by Naomi Alderman. And I read this because so many people had recommended it to me, and it probably wasn't the kind of book I normally would have gone for. But it's set in a sort of utopian world where young women get this power to electrocute people, and they basically use their hands and they electrocute people. And it's all about what the world would look like if it was women who were physically strong. So it's very much a sort of feminist book, but it's just really interesting, and it makes you think about so many things that women do because they're the physically weaker sex and how that would change if it was men who were physically the weaker sex. So it's a really interesting book. I mean, there's lots of like different characters and subplots to it. So it's not all about just kind of the feminist messaging. But it's a really interesting book. And yeah, I really enjoyed reading it.
Well, thank you, Monica.
That's interesting because you didn't enjoy that book, did you, Heather?
No, me neither. I couldn't get into it.
I can't wait to read
all.
It because Aisha Mackay said it was one of the books that she thought.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's been amazing.
No accounting for taste.
That's right. And so somebody will love what I've written too.
Everybody will love it.
Well, that about wraps it up for today. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you haven't joined our Facebook group, please do so by going to Write Club, the podcast group, and signing up. We love to read your comments. We're always interested in getting your feedback. We want to know what you're reading, and if you're writing something, tell us about it. We hope that you've enjoyed this episode. We look forward to meeting you here again next week. God willing and the creek don't rise, we'll be here. And remember, you can go to Audio Boom, Stitcher, or iTunes and listen to any or all of our previous episodes. Tell a friend about Write Club. Help us grow some more. So, goodbye, y'all.
Bye. Bye.